presently taking place. In the Seventh-day Adventist organization, we're a large organization, and our ability, I suppose, because of our size, to withstand a very large sum of money in a tort liability might be feasible. But the fact is there are many charitables and churches that are independent agencies that are 95 or greater percentage of their activities are carried on by the volunteers, that a single injury occurrence could easily close the doors, and to have to sell all of the assets in order to care for that under the present conditions of the statute. So I am here to urge a favorable consideration of this bill and a favorable consideration of the amendments that includes the volunteers and also sets the liability limits consistent with that of the state. So that's my sharing with you. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, Mr. McCullough, we need to, I'm sure other witnesses will be aware of this, but we need to have specific instances, if you could, of when you couldn't get insurance or when someone got hit so hard that they lost services, or we kind of need a little help in that regard. If you have some specifics or provide that, it would be appreciated. If not, we'll look to the witnesses as well.
There are some witnesses that are going to testify that are going to give some instances of the types of ranges that exist in some single institutions in terms of the liabilities in some schools, that we'll be able to share with you that information. And I realize that it's easier to come to consensus and decision when there is a tremendous abuse being taken place than it is to maybe look to a very strong visionary piece of legislation that would be preventative. And I see this legislation being that. There have been some very large cases in this state. And I spoke with Boy Scouts International and also Boy Scouts here in the state of Oregon. They faced a very difficult suit. But there was judgment there for gross neglect, and they paid for that. But they also deal with, in their institution, a great deal of smaller liability problems. And they're self-insured, and they try to deal with that. But these, you know, I want to be here and hold the torch up for those smaller institutions that simply would lose all that they had if these kinds of claims were maintained.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead. Identify yourself, please, for the record.
Yes, my name is Mark Siegel, and I'm the president of the Oregon Federation of Independent Schools. I have mine will be rather brief, and in my submissions, we met last week, and a small petition was circulated by our executive secretary, which may be of use to you, concern of small groups that provide child care in various contexts in the Portland area. And what I want to bring to the committee's attention is the current problem that we have with insurance and this whole situation is the chilling effect that it has. When schools look to recruit board members, for example, the first question is, do you have insurance coverage for that? And that's a very tough question when we're talking $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for a director and officer liability just for the decisions they may make four times a year at a board meeting. We're concerned that in this time when we need to look toward volunteers to help us solve the problems, be they adult illiteracy or the kind of problems that the president has called upon us to do, in the school sector, when we want to use volunteers and have them vitally involved with our programs, the concern about insurance comes up all the time. A second one is the adequacy of insurance. The schools that I'm familiar with are always asking this question, did you hear about this lawsuit, that lawsuit? Do you have enough coverage? And the more you buy, the more expensive it gets. And it's a very nervous situation when you have so much attention on potential large-scale lawsuits that affect your day-to-day operations. Well, should we not do this because of the fear of this large lawsuit that could put us under and curtailing programs and actually putting the whole focus of an organization very negatively focused? This statute seems progressive, and it's one that's been adopted in some states successfully, because it tells the school, the charitable organization, these are your limits. This is what you can, if you set aside this much money, if you cover yourself, then you can get on with your other programs. Otherwise, we do run into the situation in our common discussions, is $2 million enough, is $3 million enough, what about $5 million? And our concern is that the limited resources, especially of our smaller schools in the state, is that that's quite a budgetary impact. And then if tuitions have to be raised to cover it, then program offerings suffer, or tuition prices itself away, especially in the very, very small schools, 25, 30 students. So we urge your consideration about that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Siegel.
Thank you.
Mr. Barrows.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Tom Barrows here today representing the Oregon cluster of the YMCAs. The YMCAs also support this bill and the amendments that have been proposed, the Dash 1. There's been a concern about insurance rates. At this point, it seems to be not as severe as it's been in the past, but there's a large concern that it could, again, rates could rise so high that it would be difficult or almost impossible to obtain insurance. The Ys offer a variety of services which provide different, I suppose, potentials for liabilities, and so we would support this bill.
Thank you. Any questions of these gentlemen before we let them? Mr. Representative Bell.
I guess I have a question, because you know when we talk about these things, we always talk about the good activities that are done. And as I was reading here about property damage, it started me thinking that we have some nonprofit organizations that are so intent on their cause that they might go onto someone's property continually, time after time after time, whether it be to keep a tree from being cut down or an abortion from being performed or whatever, and, you know, continually cause damage. And I'm wondering about the fact that we don't, in this bill, there's no punitive damages, and if we limit the liability, are we being stern enough with groups with such a cause that feel it necessary, you know, that the end justifies the means, and they can go onto somebody's property and cause all kinds of problems time after time after time?
Mr. Chairman.
I think this is for anyone on the panel, actually. Start off by saying that I'm very supportive generally of the work of charitable organizations, and if two sessions in a row offered a tax credit for contributions to 501c3 social service charities and so on and so forth. But the breadth of the bill concerns me, and I wonder if there is a distinction in your mind, or should there be a distinction as a matter of public policy. First of all, you made a distinction between ordinary negligence and gross negligence in the bill, and I appreciate that. Should there be a distinction as a matter of public policy between economic damages and non-economic damages? So you have the small child who is injured through ordinary negligence in the facility of a 501c3, and that child is permanently damaged, and that child has permanent medical injuries and permanent loss of wages. Those are in the nature of economic damages. The child, when parents sue, typically sues both for economic damages and for pain and suffering, loss of consortium, so on and so forth, and we've sort of traditionally defined that into economic and non-economic damages. I wonder, should the bill not make a distinction between those two kinds of damages and say that charities can have these limits as it applies to non-economic damages, pain and suffering, loss of consortium, those sorts of things. But as far as the economic damages go, which is to put money back into somebody's pocket that they have actually or will actually lose, actual dollars lost, isn't that a fairer way to go, and wouldn't that be a little more in keeping with the mission of charities in some ways, it seems to me?
What is the state's position in using the state's limitations, for instance, as established here, to what is the state's responsibility in the same scenario? Does the state maintain
the state
that?
No, the state does not.
Yeah. Oh, the state provides the welfare.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say when the state provides welfare, so when these people, if they're those medical costs that Representative Clark talked about, go on beyond the limits of recovery, the person becomes a ward of the state. They don't become a ward of the charity.
True. Representative Edmondson, the charitable though it's not statute, obviously, does have that moral responsibility to care and be with that. And I, and Representative Clark, I represent, or I see that the point you make is reasonable, and I don't know if there's a problem between making that distinction amongst the others.
And it may well be,
today.
Mr. Chair, if I could comment back on the comment that the gentleman made, it may well be that the state policy ought to be changed along the lines that we're discussing. That might well be as well, but unfortunately that's not the, we're not able to do that with this bill at this time, but it's a, at least a logical distinction that I think makes a certain amount of public policy sense. I understand the fear that you're raising, the fear of being put out of business by a lawsuit where you get $1 million or actually in this state you get $500,000 of, that's the limit, isn't it, for non-economic, $500,000 of non-economic damages for pain and suffering that could put you under. And it's easier, it seems to me, to say that we're going to balance the public policy between the work that you do on the one hand and the damage that this person gets for non-economic damages than it is to say that we're going to take away lost earnings, medical bills, those, you know, economic damages that the people really do suffer. So anyway, I appreciate the comment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix
and Representative Bell. I'd have an observation to offer in regard to the governmental immunity. You need to remember that we start off with a constitutional provision that says that the government's absolutely immune, and then we start moving away from that. So analogizing this to the government is probably not an apt analogy, because obviously there may be separation of church and state issues out there somewhere else, but as far as this bill goes, you're not putting yourselves into the government's shoes, and the government has a special constitutional provision that says that unless the government allows itself to be sued, it can't be sued. And then we've backed off from that, and we've put limits on it, but that applies to the government as a special kind of entity. It comes from the old king, the king can do no wrong concept. In those days, of course, the king could do no wrong because the king ran the courts, and the king wouldn't let you into court unless the king wanted to. And that's where we come up with the idea of governmental immunity. Now, on to this bill, though, I think Representative Clark is touching on a sensitive issue, and that is, I can understand saying no punitive damages. Punitive damages are to punish, and if you have a charitable organization, you're trying to, we assume that if someone's qualified as such, that they're trying to do good things, and you don't want to punish the charitable organization. When you put caps on other forms of damages, the question that then arises, what if someone has been harmed monetarily in an amount that exceeds what's provided for in this legislation? Maybe the person gets dealt with through the public wheel generally. More often, it's some specific government agency that ends up picking up the tab. And I'm sort of bringing you around to ask you the question, can you make the case, besides saying, well, we do good, therefore we ought to be protected, but make the case for saying that there ought to be a cap on the damages that are awardable for actual monetary losses suffered by someone? Say the medical services cost them $700,000. They needed a major kidney transplant in order to deal with an accident. What's your reaction to that?
Representative Mannix, I think that my reaction to that is that as in looking at this piece of legislation, it's more far-reaching and more visionary to look at the smaller abuses and possibility of abuses out there rather than dealing with the exception. And I realize that much of your responsibility is to make sure you cover everybody in the state of Oregon and not just some people. And as the exception might be there, and if there is a way of building language in there to care for the exception, my concern is that we end up the exception becomes the rule, and the rule becomes so far-reaching that then the abuses take place.
Can I take you another step further? Sure, I can. I can buy the concept and the argument, if you were going bare and you did not have insurance coverage, of saying, gee, the $700,000 judgment against our organization wipes us out, and look at all the wonderful things we do and can do for $700,000 to benefit very many people, and therefore it's as we could make a societal judgment that it's better to protect you against that because of the fact that you're going to do so much more good elsewhere, maybe preventative care for newborns, whatever, that you're doing so much good elsewhere that when it comes time to paying off on that one case, we're making social judgments, just as we're doing with the prioritizing of medical services and saying, well, we just can't afford this as a society. But you don't do that in terms of insurance here. It looks like all you're doing is reducing the cost of your insurance by setting some caps, and therefore you can go to the insurance company and say, well, we have more limited liability, therefore why don't you restrict our rates? Wouldn't you be better served if you went all the way and just said, well, if there's this wonderful organization and they have no insurance, caps would apply. But if they do have insurance, no caps apply. I'm just throwing out that question because I'm going to hear that question, I'm sure.
Well, Representative Max, I don't know that I have a response for it.
We're as concerned as you are, representing a whole federation of independent schools. When I find out about schools that may not have any insurance, may be very underinsured, or may be saying, and I have not heard this among my organization, but we'll just bankrupt out. You see, I get concerned about that when I buy car insurance. How much is enough for the damage I'm going to cause? I'm not property. I don't, there's no, you know, in a private situation. So that's a concern that I carry all the way along. If we could get everyone up to an acceptable limit, you know, I think we'd be in a better situation than we are now with people able to opt out so quickly. I think that would encourage all of our schools.
So you're saying the social value judgment here is if we put a cap on the liability, more organizations will get coverage, therefore more people will have some protection rather than so many people going bare right now?
I think that'll happen because the discussion is, I can take your example, and we share it. What if it's 1,700,000? What do we do? How much is enough? And we sit around talking that way all day long and allocating resources toward that insurance. We're concerned about that very unlikely possibility. But if we could do something that would cover us more broadly, I mean, we have minimum insurance limits in the state. I don't feel comfortable with those, and, you know, but what do you say? What do you say to your friends who aren't doing that? And you know about those kind of injuries that can occur when you read about those. So I think that the overall impression, if we could get everyone covered, especially the small groups, and who may not be thinking in terms of their volunteers or may be saying, we don't even have the money to handle that. We'll just go under. So I think that there may be that broad effect.
One last question.
Representative Maddox.
Had you considered limiting the liability in the sense of the actors, that is, saying there will be no liability for actions by volunteers, or limited liability for actions by volunteers or directors? Actually, I think we get back to that. Isn't that what you do on page one of this bill with your definition of volunteers?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, actually, but your paid employees are also covered by this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You ever thought about going the other way and saying volunteers, no problem, that you'll have a limited liability, but for paid employees, you have regular liability? Just raising the question.
A lot of our schools, of course, the pay is so minimal, there's the dedication there, that would sort of be a funny kind of a situation, but I understand the thrust.
Just thinking out loud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. We'd like to, I have until about 3:15 in this committee. I'd like to work this bill if we can, also work House Bill 2010, if I can, but that only gives me 25 minutes, and I have a witness list here. So I'd appreciate those witnesses who have specifics to stick to those if they could. But let's invite up William Buck, Dennis Mills, and Lester Young. I know that some of you folks don't spend much time together, but you're going to have the opportunity. If you could be brief, we hope to go into work session and move some kind of limitation out today. But if we won't, if we can't get it done in the time allowed, we'll have to come back for another hearing, and we're getting late in the session. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm William H. Buck from Portland Christian Schools, 12456 Northeast Brazee, Portland, Oregon. One of six administrators in a three-campus system representing nearly 900 students. I'm here to give testimony in favor of House Bill 2732. We're concerned with the rising cost of liability insurance premiums, which in budgeting for our school is the approximate cost of one teacher's salary. An excess of judgment by a plaintiff would force the closure of Portland Christian Schools. Our assets would not cover any substantial amount above the liability coverage. Nearly 900 students would have to enter the Portland, Park Rose, and Dave Douglas school districts for educational service. House Bill 2732 would encourage employees and hopefully volunteers, if included in this bill, to render services where they are currently cautious of potential liability claims. Portland Christian School has produced OSA state champion choirs, cheerleaders during the 1990-91 school year, as well as two individuals who are semifinalists in the National Merit Scholarship Competition. An excess of liability judgment could end the positive impact Portland Christian Schools has had since 1949. I encourage your leadership in the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
I'm Lester Young. I represent the Assemblies of God Oregon District at this hearing. I am licensed by the State of Oregon for property and casualty lines of insurance. I am licensed as well in the states of Washington and Alaska with Western Church Insurance Services Corp., located at 3995 Hagers Grove Road, Southeast Salem, Oregon. My interest in this subject is to see to it that our insureds can know for a fact that their liability limit will not exceed a certain amount and can therefore arrive at the proper amount of premium to budget for this coverage in their insurance program. I will state a few actual cases that could have and may yet put the insured in a very difficult situation financially. It appears to us that some participants in the judicial system are doing their best to put nonprofit organizations in jeopardy as far as their continuance in operation is concerned. Case number one, according to my source of information, the First Assembly of God in Albany, Oregon, was sued on three counts of sexual misconduct and molestation at $5 million per count, for a total of $15 million. Later, this was raised to $7 million per count for a total of $21 million. The case was later settled out of court for a lesser amount of money. Either of the first two amounts would have been far and above their policy limits of $1 million. Case number two, the Sweet Home Assembly.
I'm not going to interrupt you on every one of these, but this one is sexual misconduct and molestation are usually intentional conduct. Does your policy cover intentional misconduct? Most policies exclude coverage for intentional torts.
You throw me a little bit with that intentional word in there.
Well, you're an insurance manager, I thought.
Well,
thought that you might be familiar with intentional conduct. If you're not, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Representative Evans is probably right to a degree that the person who perpetrated it probably wasn't acting within the scope of their employment and probably was intentional. I assume, though, that there's probably some allegations in there that would bring in the church supervisory board or for failure to supervise, failure to train, you know, all the things that they used, common negligence stuff, to try to bring in the deeper pockets and get beyond the employee's intentional misconduct. So, and you might, Mr. Young, if you have, we do read pretty well, and you provide us with your written testimony. If you want to just highlight that, we can move along a little quicker. Representative Evanson knows what his questions are, but I have already, while you've been talking, already read all your entire written testimony. Which
I won't ask any questions on Alaska insurance law.
He won't ask any questions about Alaska insurance law, so you're off the hook there. But you did a good job in presenting the specific instances, which is what we were looking for. And if you have anything specific or anything else you'd like to add to the written testimony, you can go ahead and do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My remarks have been basically in the interest of showing some difficult, very difficult situations for some of our nonprofit organizations as to actual suits that have been levied against them. The other aspect is the cost of many of the lines of insurance. The liability cost is almost as much as the property, or maybe more in some instances. Again, this affects our church budgets, and we hope that this bill will find a place of retrospect in that area.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Appreciate
Chair.
You coming. We saw you before, sir. Go
yes,
ahead.
I have some additional information in and that was asked for. I'm Dr. Mills with the Association of Christian Schools, representing 83 schools in Oregon. I called a local insurance rep to see what the rates were. That was a question that was raised here before. They vary between elementary and secondary students. Low of $1 million, the elementary is at $9.20 per student, and escalates up to a $10 million policy for elementary to $15.90. It's higher for secondary students. Secondary starts off at a $1 million policy at $16 per student and escalates at a $10 million policy of $27.60. I took a member school here in Salem, Salem Academy, as an example. Their minimum policy, which is very characteristic of the 83 member schools in our state, would be $7,386. If they felt that they needed more policy coverage up to 12 or 10 million, their policy with this particular corporation or company would be $12,753. The concern raised was that that represents, in essence, a beginning level teacher's salary for some on that area. Also, an additional, and I'll leave the letter here, came from the executive director from the Albany Boys and Girls Club. And they said that nonprofits have been struggling for some time with increased insurance costs. Time and money spent in this effort is taken away from the clients we serve. Albany Boys and Girls Club carries $1 million insurance, very common to what our schools do, too. We also carry insurance for our board of directors. Excessive judgments would close us down. And that was the concern that that we had. Many of our schools do not have the necessary resources, even if the judgment were in excess of what their resources were.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Dr. Mills. Questions of these witnesses? Thank you all for coming. I don't know if I'm less for me. Last for me, West Hills Christian School, Stan Baker, Mark Metzger, and Dale Kennedy. Dale? Okay. Go ahead.
I'm Mark Metzger. I'm principal at Eugene Christian School, and I'm here in favor of House Bill 2732. I don't think there's a whole lot that I can say in addition to what's already been heard with the concern about the rising costs of liability insurance. I am concerned, though, about the availability, and I disagree with Mr. McCulloch when he talks about this bill as being visionary. I think it's reactionary. If you look at the history of this same legislation in Texas, South Carolina, and other parts of the United States, it was something originated back 85, 86. I was an administrator in California at the time, and we, as a Christian high school, about 900 students, lost our liability insurance, could not find liability insurance, had to go with a secondary line carrier. It was an out-of-state organization, paid exorbitant rates. It was at the same time that a number of municipalities in California were closing parks and recreation programs, closing parks themselves because of the liability exposure. I was just digging through my own file at Eugene Christian prior to my coming up. At that same time, 1986, our school was canceled. This was without any claims, but our school was canceled by Comstock Insurance. And we'd asked our insurance agent to find us another carrier. He's an independent carrier, represented several different companies. He said that he couldn't find but just one company willing to take on a private school. He suggested in this letter that we check with other agencies to see if we can find insurance for liability. In recent years, that situation has eased some. I talked to this same agent, say, why now? You know, why is it that it's easier to get insurance now? One is that, through his understanding anyway, the insurance is tied, insurance availability is sometimes tied to financial interest rates, and at the time that companies were very hesitant to offer insurance to private nonprofits such as private schools, it was at a time when they were conservative with their money. There were some cases out there in the field, multi-million dollar cases that scared everybody, and at the time this was going on, interest rates were quite low. And I see interest rates coming down, and I'm wondering if companies are again going to become very conservative about who they insure, and whether schools are going to be caught in that position again. I want to, address Mr. Edmondson just for a minute. As a volunteer with Kids Sports, you're, I think, from the Eugene area, is that correct? You're familiar with that. I coach. I help write grants for Kids Sports. I was just talking to Ralph Myers on the phone this morning. They're looking for what to do about liability for that organization. They provide